Hi, friends. I'm Pearson Cross. Welcome to Bayou to Beltway. Today, we're joined by Ms. Michelle Ehrenberg, who is the co-founder and leader of Lift Louisiana, a program that advocates for women, educates, advocates, and litigates on women issues, women's issues, and community issues. A little background on Ms. Ehrenberg. She was born in Maryland, but moved to Monroe, Louisiana, where she was raised. She went to Tulane and Loyola, eventually finishing at Loyola with a bachelor's in psychology before moving on to University of New Orleans and getting a master's in public administration. She worked in the area of environmental policy for a while before, in 2016, co-founding Lift Louisiana, and she's been there ever since. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. So the reason why we're here today talking is that the Supreme Court recently decided not to stop Texas's anti-abortion law, SB 8, which bans all abortions after 6 weeks from taking effect. Justin, of course, there was some controversy here. Justice Elena Kagan wrote that her colleagues barely bothered to explain, quote, why a challenge to an obviously unconstitutional abortion regulation backed by a wholly unprecedented enforcement scheme is likely to prevail. Not pulling any punches there, Ms. Kagan. So tell me, what does this non-decision by the court in Texas's anti-abortion law mean for access to abortion services for women across the country and in Louisiana?
Well, Justice Kagan was right on point. Basically, the conservatives on the Supreme Court told Republican-controlled states that they could disregard Roe while insisting that wasn't what they were doing. So it was a little bit of gaslighting, I think, on their part. And, essentially this sets the stage for Republican-run legislatures like Louisiana's to know that they can pass similar laws and that the Supreme Court will pretend that they're not able to block them. This is really unprecedented. But it's important to know that, you know, Louisiana has really stepped up its game in passing abortion restrictions and, you know, particularly ones that were blatantly unconstitutional. And they've been toying with the same playbook for the past couple of years, passing laws that ran afoul of the Supreme Court precedent in Roe v. Wade, but delaying their enactment pending the outcome of legal challenges from other states. And so this was, you know, essentially a way for Louisiana to inoculate themselves from a lawsuit and allows the state to avoid the financial burden of defending those laws in court. So we've seen, you know, states try to really use trickery in the justice system and some really unprecedented tactics to, you know, avoid being faced with federal challenges to the laws that they're passing.
Well, let's talk about that trickery a little bit, because one of the reasons why the Supreme Court at least said that they didn't get involved here is that there was something unusual about this particular bill, wasn't there? And it had to do with enforcement. Can you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, so that's right. So the Texas legislature passed this law and prohibited state officials from enforcing the law. Instead, they basically rely on citizen bounty hunters, empowering individual citizens, not even Texas citizens, people from all over the country, anywhere really, can sue a provider of abortions or someone who is assisting, or I guess the term that they use in the statute is aids and abets someone in getting an abortion. They could sue that person and take them to court. And if they are successful in their lawsuit, then the state will pay them, you know, at least $10,000. So it's really incentivizing sort of a vigilante justice, system of enforcing this particular law. And it sets up a scheme where, you know, the state is offering cash prizes, for civilly prosecuting your neighbors for their, you know, medical decisions. And, you know, it's a really unprecedented way to pass an abortion ban and to avoid that ban, you know, being before the federal courts, which have, you know, over and over and over again for 50 years upheld a woman's right to have an abortion.
Now, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong, the reason that the part of the reason why this ban was upheld had to do with the enforcement procedure, because typically the courts enjoin a state actor from enforcing a particular legislative order. But in this case, there's no state actor. These are citizens bringing this to the attention, I guess, of the authorities. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So it usually what happens is the state will pass an abortion restriction, and then a lawsuit will be filed, essentially asking the federal courts to block the state health department or the state attorney general from being able to enforce the law against abortion providers or people receiving abortion care. But in this case, there were no state officials that were tasked with enforcing this law. And so what the Supreme Court said is, you know, there's no one to block. There's no one to, a state official to block from enforcing the law. And because no lawsuits, from individual citizens, from vigilante citizens have been filed yet, then there's no one to, there's no way for the Supreme Court to block the law. We agree with Justice Kagan and Justice Sotomayor and Justice Roberts that, that's precisely the kind of a situation when there is, a novel use of the of law and a novel use of judicial proceedings where the Supreme Court should step in, block the law initially from taking effect, and give themselves more time to really dig into the merits of that particular case.
Yeah, this seems to, and I certainly agree with you there, it seems like this idea is too clever by half. It's just absolutely crazy. When I heard it, I really couldn't believe it. And immediately people started spinning out scenarios whereby we could pass all kinds of laws like this that would allow people to surveil their neighbors and then launch lawsuits. They were thinking in states that have very strict gun control laws, for example, you could report your neighbors for maybe having a semi-automatic weapon or something like that, thereby right. putting people into this kind of surveillance mode. And it seems completely antithetical to what we normally think about in terms of the jurisprudence system. Do you have any idea why the Supreme Court balked on this particular one? I mean, I have some ideas about why they did, but it just seems on its face that this enforcement scheme using citizens would be something they just couldn't countenance without, as you say, stepping back and saying, no, wait a minute, we gotta think about this.
Yeah, it's really hard to understand, especially because, this is this kind of a law is not dissimilar from something like the Fugitive Slave Act, which the Supreme Court looked at it, eventually and said, this is not great. We shouldn't be having individual citizens out there, rounding up people who have escaped their enslavers. I think that really a lot of it just boils down to, this is a very conservative, very anti-abortion court right now. There are five for sure, but six conservative justices that none of them, really believe that abortion access is a constitutional right that should be protected. And, I think that, five of them at least were very pleased to get a case before them that, essentially could overturn Roe in one state and sort of kickstart this experiment before they even actually have to look at the details and the merits or consider what the impact of that would be on women and families and just average citizens in the country.
In case you just tuned in, we are talking to Ms. Michelle Ehrenberg, who is, of course, the co-founder and director of LIFT Louisiana, a non-governmental organization that educates, advocates, and litigates for women and community issues. So a lot of people have been saying, ever since Amy Coney Barrett got placed on the court, that they didn't think Roe v. Wade was going to survive very long, or in fact, it was done for. There's a Mississippi case that I believe is heading its way to the court's docket. They've agreed to hear it. based on Gestational Age Act that was passed by Mississippi in 2018, prohibiting abortions after 15 weeks, except in cases of medical emergencies or severe fetal abnormalities. So this is a pre-viability ban, which in previous decisions by the Supreme Court was illegal, viability being established at around 24 weeks. They're going to hear this case later this year. Knowing what you know now and with the what we know from this most recent Texas case, is Roe gone, is in your view?
Well, it's really hard to say. I think anyone, you know, that follows the Supreme Court, you know, would have a hard time, you know, trying to use a crystal ball and make those kinds of definitive predictions. But this case does mark the first time that the court will rule on the constitutionality of a pre-viability abortion ban since Roe v. Wade in 1973. And we are deeply concerned that this court in particular could use this case to overturn Roe, or at the very least, eliminate its core protections and open the floodgates for more bans or restrictions. And in Louisiana, this case is particularly important because, as I mentioned earlier, Louisiana has passed, you know, laws that are tied, you know, their enforcement is tied to laws in other states. And Louisiana also has a 15-week abortion ban that is, you know, that is dependent on the outcome of the case in Mississippi. So if the Supreme Court upholds Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban, then Louisiana's would go into effect immediately, even if the court doesn't decide in that case to completely overturn Roe v. Wade. So this is particularly a critical time for, you know, folks in Mississippi, but also in Louisiana and Texas. And there are so few abortion providers across the Gulf South anymore that, you know, people in Louisiana are very dependent on access in other states in order to be able to get the care that they need. And, you know, we've definitely seen that with Texas, and what's happening in Texas happening just at the same time that the Southeast was, you know, was really devastated by Hurricane Ida, and two of the only three abortion clinics that we have left in Louisiana went offline and were offline for more than a week. So all the people, you know, desperately seeking care in Texas that was no longer available to them, you know, also were not able to access care in Louisiana because there was no power at the abortion clinics and no services were being provided. So, you know, there's just a lot going on in this country right now that is really, you know, impacting people's access to care. And these decisions that the court is making are going to have, you know, really monumental impacts on people's lives.
This is happening very quickly. I'm looking back at an article in 2019, February, where the Supreme Court, in fact, blocked the imposition of a Louisiana abortion law, which required, I believe, doctors to have admitting privileges. And they stepped in and said, no, it's an undue burden on women who are trying to seek a legal procedure by getting access to safe and legal abortions by requiring doctors to have admitting privileges. So they struck it down. It was 5-4. But if you go forward, you know, 2.5 years now, we have a different court, and we have this court who decided not to hear the Texas case. And in light of that, we look at the case from Mississippi that's coming forward, which would prohibit abortions after 15 weeks. And then, as you point out, we realize that Louisiana is one of these states that has trigger laws. Of course, mm-hmm. The trigger laws are ways for, if anything happens to Roe v. Wade that overturns the viability period or the period in the first trimester when women were assumed to have unfettered right to seek abortion access, then Louisiana's laws could change really, really quickly, like on a dime, in fact. So what is this going to mean in Louisiana if the court hears this Mississippi law and decides to go ahead and strike or support that and so eliminate the Roe first trimester scheme?
Yeah, so you're absolutely right. If Roe is overturned, Louisiana's trigger law would become effective immediately, and it would prohibit almost all abortions with very limited exceptions in Louisiana. And then it's important to know that Louisiana also passed a constitutional amendment last year that would make it nearly impossible for the legislature to pass any laws that, would protect abortion access in the future. So, this has been a long game of the anti-abortion movement, and they, essentially have been working very hard over the last several decades in Louisiana to, to put in place, an entire scheme that would, strip people of their protection to reproductive health care services, particularly abortion. And, I think that it's really important to talk about, if Roe is overturned and Louisiana bans abortions for most cases, who exactly would be most impacted by this? Because abortion bans would fall the hardest on Black women and people having difficulty already making ends meet because they're already facing barriers to accessing health care. And, those barriers are a result of, all kinds of different systems, racism, implicit bias, and other forms of discrimination. Louisiana also is facing a maternal mortality crisis, with Black women 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy complications than white women. So if we're forcing people to carry pregnancies to term without addressing the risk involved in those pregnancies, we are undoubtedly going to increase the numbers of maternal deaths in our state.
So that's one of the things that I think is lost here is that, one, there's been a very long-standing push by the right to make abortion illegal on the state level using state legislatures in friendly states, using advocacy and doing that. They have, as you say, pursued the long game. My question here is, generally speaking, support for abortion, at least in some sense, has a majority in the United States. So people who think that, there should be a right to abortion, at least in some cases, is in fact a majority opinion in the United States. So it makes you ask the question, well, how is this happening?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very good question. And I think that what we see is that overwhelmingly in conservative states like Louisiana and a lot of the red states that, have very strong majorities of conservatives are anti-abortion or super majorities in some cases, there really isn't enough support within the legislature to stop anti-abortion laws from getting through. We've seen in Louisiana, we are increasing every single session. We're increasing the number of legislators that will vote against these restrictions. And a lot of that has to do with education. We spend a lot of time educating legislators about what the impact of these restrictions will be on the people in their communities, on their constituents. And, that education does go a long way, but we just don't have the numbers. We don't have the numbers to stop them, regardless of how much progress we feel like we're making or that we know that we're making with our efforts. And so I think that, what this says to people who are concerned about this issue is that elections have consequences. And, a lot of people will pay attention to what's happening in federal elections, but it's the state legislatures that are really, making or breaking people's constitutional rights. It's the states that are, passing and enacting these abortion restrictions. It's the states that are stripping people of their voting rights. It's the states that are, carrying out, an agenda against LGBTQ people. And so, progressives, in Louisiana really need to start focusing more attention on what's happening at the state level and, and using their voice at the ballot box, making sure that we are asking, these questions of candidates as they're asking, to be sent to the Capitol in Baton Rouge, as you know, our state representatives or our state senators, they need to be asked these questions, and people need to, you know, to vote on these issues. That's the only way that we're going to see the changes that we want.
Well, one of the things that's unusual to me is that abortion laws in the state legislature pass really by overwhelming majorities, and are very, very popular, and very in numbers that are way more popular or way more overpowering than the public opinion. I'm wondering what the dynamic is whereby state legislators are somehow more pro-life than, in fact, their standard constituents. Why do you suppose that would be the case?
I think that some of it has to do with the organizing that the anti-abortion movement has done over the decades. They are really good at mobilizing, people to contact their legislators. They hold their legislators accountable for their votes on these abortion restrictions. And, you know, we've seen, you know, really significant instances of legislators appearing to literally be scared of voting against a bill that's being put forward by the Louisiana Right to Life. And so I think that, they are wielding an unparalleled amount of influence in the state legislature. They're really able to mobilize people that agree with them in a way that, you know, it's been harder for those of us who are working really hard to protect abortion access and to work on other social justice issues to be able to mobilize people. I don't think that is to say that there aren't majorities in Louisiana that, you know, believe that abortion should be legal, at least in some circumstances. You know, we've seen polling that shows us that is the case. But those people are not as vocal, and it's not the issue that they are mobilizing around. And that's a challenge. That's a challenge for us. It's a challenge for, you know, organizations like Lift Louisiana and Planned Parenthood and a lot of our other partners that, you know, are fighting so hard to protect these fundamental human rights.
You know, in 1972, before Roe v. Wade was law, New York was one of the few places where women could get a legal abortion. And in fact, in that year, over 100,000 women came to New York City from other states to get an abortion. If Roe v. Wade is overturned, are we headed back to a situation in which individual states will then become meccas of abortion, and other states like Louisiana will be places where you essentially cannot get an abortion? And what will that mean for the women who are seeking relief?
I think that that's very likely. And actually, we've really seen a trend in that direction just in the past few decades as many of these restrictions have gone into place and reduced the number of clinics in states. Even if abortion is, you know, still legal there, it's almost completely inaccessible. And in some circumstances, it's easier for someone to travel out of state to get the abortion that they're seeking rather than, you know, to try to access the care in the state that they live, because of, you know, the whole scheme of restrictions, the waiting periods and the, you know, ultrasound requirements and the gestational age limitations and all of these things that we've seen pass in states, you know, across the Gulf South and throughout the Midwest over the last few decades. So I do think that, you know, there's going to be states like, you know, along the West Coast and the Northeast Coast that, you know, will be basically bearing the burden of abortion care for the rest of the country. It's going to put a significant burden on them. But it's also really important to remember that, most people are not going to have the resources to be able to do that. They're not going to be able to travel out of state. They don't have the money to do it. They are not going to be able to get the transportation. They are not going to be able to take the time off of work or find childcare. And so women with means will be able to go to these states and access their constitutional human rights. But poor women and, you know, women of color and undocumented women are not going to be able to have that same sort of freedom to, you know, to travel wherever they need to access care. And they're the ones that are going to be the most impacted. The other thing that I think that we'll see is a lot more women self-managing their own abortions. And, you know, when I say that, you know, I think that a lot of, you know, people, especially, you know, people 50, 60 years old and older, you know, think about the pre-Roe days and, you know, they conjure up the images of the coat hangers and the back alley abortions. But that's not really what self-managed abortion looks like today. There's a lot of resources that people can access and, you know, that they can use medication abortion to self-manage their own abortion. So we're likely to see an increase in self-managed abortion care as well.
Well, that being the case, so let's say that Roe v. Wade is overturned, abortions become practically illegal in Louisiana. Will women still be able to get the abortifacients, the pills, the RU486s, the to address their need?
There are a lot of resources out there for people who, you know, are trying to access the medication abortions, but you know they are not legal, and so. You know, so you're taking a risk in states like Louisiana and trying to access those medications. And, you know, particularly in, you know, a state like Texas, you know, their law is very clear. If anybody is, you know, passing along information to someone about, you know, what website they can go to, you know, to try to order the medication abortion online or even get information about medication abortion, you know, that friend that's just passing along that website could be subject to the law in Texas as well. So,
welcome.
You know,
welcome to the Big Brother state.
Exactly.
We're coming to the end of our program, and I know we're going to return to this issue because this is going to be on everybody's minds moving forward, and I'm sure that we're going to be talking again and hearing what your response will be as the court moves. We've been talking with Michelle Ehrenberg today, who is the president and CEO of Lift Louisiana, a women's advocacy organization in Louisiana. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.